The White Network presents Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn. Your host, Carolyn Yeager.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the July 28th, 2012 edition of Saturday Afternoon. Well, today I had a big show planned, but the best laid plans often go awry, and this is the case today. I have one guest with me. This was to be the beginning of future panel discussions that I plan to have. I would need to plan on about four or five people to make sure I had three, but that might need to be, because very strangely, Hadding has not called in, and Hadding Scott, who was to be on the program, I'm sure something has happened, maybe to his computer access. So I don't know, because I don't have his home phone number, so he's just not online. So he can't call in after the show starts the way we have it set up. He could, but I'm not sure if it wouldn't pull us off the air. And I don't have my software engineer with me today, Tan Stoffel, who could be overseeing that, is totally out of touch today. So he's not available. So, but anyway, my good friend Charles Kraft, who was scheduled to be on the program, is here. And so it's going to be Charles and I, and I think we're going to be able to cover this material pretty well. We are sorry that Hadding's not here. And I did have some other people too, but for one reason or another, different people couldn't do it. So this program today has kind of been under a cloud. But we're going to make the best of it, right, Charles?
We're going to try.
Okay. Well, you're a good guy, and I'm glad you're here. Very glad. Charles Kraft is, Charles, I didn't really fix up an introduction for you, but you've been on my program before, at least once, if not more than that. And the last time was with another fellow, and we talked about the art of the Third Reich, the artifacts, and so on. And you're the one that got that program started. So, and you are an artist. And why don't you tell people just a little bit about yourself before we get started, and why you're here, why you are so interested in the subject of Holocaust and also white nationalism.
Well, my profession is art, and I'm a ceramics maker. I used to be a painter. I'm self-taught. I was a 60s dropout, and proceeding along as sort of a, I guess you describe me as a cultural Marxist because of my involvement with the counterculture in the 70s. And I drifted into white nationalism as a result of reading a book about a Romanian archbishop who was charged with crimes against humanity and subsequently deported from the United States. And I, for some reason, I had read a pulp paperback on a road trip I was taking called Nazis in America, and the chapter on Bishop Valerian Trifa intrigued me. And I started investigating this case, and the deeper I got into it, the more I realized that the charges against him were trumped up. So that led me into investigating the Holocaust, and then I went through that into becoming aware of the writings of Kevin MacDonald and some of the other intellectual leaders of what we call the white nationalist movement. So that's kind of my story in a nutshell.
Okay. Well, you've been pretty active. I mean, I don't know if you mind telling people what your email, your name is when you comment on forums and so on, because people recognize that, and you show up everywhere, and you have good comments to make, and you're very knowledgeable about the whole business. I know that. So I should say that we're not. It's not just Charles and I, because we have you listeners, and we have a good amount of listeners already to this program, and you are willing to send us questions and comments by email, so you can participate that way. And I already have one from someone in Europe that was two of them that were sent last night. Well, one last night, one this morning. But this will, you know, and there'll be more. So I will remember to look at those, and so we'll have more participation that way, Charles. So. Well, I had thought that I would start out by, Charles, what are you doing?
Nothing. I'm right here.
Oh, somebody's moving something around there. I don't know what it is. Okay. It sounds like somebody's pushing something around. Everything sounds real loud on the program.
You want me to mute my?
No.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. Well, when you mute, you sometimes forget to unmute, so it's better not to, I think. I don't know what that was, just something that happened. Is it somebody in the background, maybe?
Yeah, somebody went in the door.
Well, that's it. See, and it sounded like a big, well, it sounds louder to me than it does on the program. So I'll try not to interfere, comment on that every time I hear it. But yeah, every noise sounds real loud. Okay, so we're going to talk today about, I guess I should cover that a little bit. About the article that has been so popular and you might say highly commented on, which I described in my announcement for this program, by an article that was been published at the Occidental Observer, which is Kevin McDonald's website, and it was by Greg Johnson, and the title is "Dealing with the Holocaust," and it. The basic idea of the article was that Holocaust revisionism is good in itself, but it is not helpful to white white nationalism or to white nationalist work or advance or whatever to bring that into it, because it kind of muddies up the waters. Basically, and a lot of people, you're going to get all kinds of resistance because of it. So it's best to just step over that and go on without it, and leave that to the revisionists to talk about. And I was rather happy to see that a lot of people wrote very intelligent comments to this program and to this article. And you know, there were 755, and it's now been closed. And I think it was. Let me just add that I think it was a good decision to close the comments, as you know, you can only go so far, and everything important had been said, and it was starting to get kind of nasty there at the end. So they're closed, and so we don't have anything more coming on that. But a lot of people, a lot of very good commenters, made very good responses saying why they thought Greg Johnson was wrong in his calculations and in what he thought. And it's just extremely interesting, all that has been said. And there's a strong, strong feeling from many, many out there, many of us, that we don't think that Holocaust revisionism is bad for the white nationalist. I hate to call it a movement, because it's more than that. It's like for the work, how to present white nationalism to the public, you know, how to make strides, how to gain more adherence and so on. So, but this is very controversial, and I think it's important to be discussed. So, you know, we're gonna give our views on that today, and get the views of our listeners. So I'm going to start out here now with just saying that, in defense of what I think, not so much defense, but in helpful to reason, part of the reasons why I think that revisionism should be very important to white nationalism. And that is a couple stories that are in the news lately. I'll just real quick go through them. One is one that we see often. It's not anything unusual. We see this kind of thing quite often. It says Australia will contribute $500,000, $500,000, to help preserve the World War II concentration camp sites, Auschwitz and Birkenau, in southern Poland. Prime Minister Gillard said the camps continue to serve as a solemn reminder of the terrible crime perpetuated against millions of people during the war. So they, you know, the point is that this, these camps must remain, and the people of the world must continue to be reminded of these crimes of, and what happened. They say millions of people during the war. Of course, by millions, they're talking about Auschwitz-Birkenau. So they really, it really means millions of at Auschwitz-Birkenau, which the Holocaust narrative does say that millions were not necessarily put to death, but were harmed very badly, were treated very badly at this camp. And so we have to keep that going, keep it preserved, so we can never forget that. And it says the ongoing preservation of the Auschwitz-Birkenau memorial site was important to ensure the horrific events of the Holocaust were never repeated again, she said. And, you know, this gives her an opportunity to say all these things. She said Australia had joined the community of nations in contributing to the perpetual fund of the Auschwitz-Birkenau Foundation. And she goes on to say that the intention is simple, to ensure that the foundation, the Auschwitz-Birkenau Foundation, will never want for money, so that the place will always be conserved. Always, always, forever, forever, folks. So, and she said this at the Jewish Holocaust Center in Melbourne. All right, so we see that everything here is all, you know, pumping up the Holocaust. Now, another story that came out just the other day, all, again, not anything unusual, but what we just taken for granted and what we hear a lot, U.S. President Obama named or renamed seven members of the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Council, all donors to Democrats and including representatives from the entertainment, social media, and human rights sectors, as well as a past AIPAC president. Now, in the release, Obama named Tom Bernstein, an entertainment industry mogul, to another five-year term as, I guess, the head of it or something. And he's been chairman of the council since 2010, so he gets another five-year term. The others he named are Amy Friedkin. These are all Jews, folks, every one of them, in my opinion. Amy Friedkin, past president of the of AIPAC, past president of AIPAC. Susan Lowenberg, who is, she served on the board of a number of Jewish groups, including the American Jewish World Service and San Francisco JCC. She's the daughter of a Holocaust survivor. Deborah Oppenheimer, executive vice president of NBC Universal International Television Production, daughter of two Holocaust survivors. She won an Academy Award for a movie she made, Into the Arms of Strangers, Stories of the Kinder Transport. Then Cheryl Pisak, the daughter of another daughter of a survivor. You know, we know who these survivors, how much these people are really survivors. But is a Florida-based importer of flowers. Anyway, Richard Price heads a financial services company. He's a Chicago area philanthropist plays a major role in Chicago area philanthropy. That has to be, he has to be Jewish too. And then Elliot Schraga, vice president for communication at Facebook. He has been a fellow at the Council of on Foreign Relations and served on the board of the International League for Human Rights. Now, these are the people who get on this Holocaust Memorial board, which is what runs the Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C. And you see what kind of people they are. And they have they're predominantly Democrats, and they're raising money for Obama. But also here's a second one. I didn't put my space in there properly. That's the end of that one. And then one more little thing. At a conference on preventing genocide held at the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C., Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said that Holocaust denial and Israel criticism that crossed into anti-Semitism required vigilance. We must remain vigilant against those deniers and against anti-Semitism, because when heads of state and religious leaders deny the Holocaust from their bully pulpits, we cannot let their lies go unanswered, she said. And she said, and yes, when criticism of Israeli government policies crosses over into demonization of Israel and Jews, we must push back. So, and then on top of that, the museum, the Washington, D.C. Holocaust Memorial Museum, released a poll timed for this symposium that she was speaking at the museum. And it showed that substantial majorities of Americans believe that genocide is still possible and favor intervention to stop it. Now, you know that 90, the survey showed that 94% of Americans, 94% believe genocide is still very much a concern and could occur today. So that means that, you know, they asked the question in such a way that if it could occur, could is the tricky word there. If it could occur, well, naturally most people will say, well, sure, it could occur. So they make that look like it's really an overwhelming amount of support from the American people. And it showed, they said that 69% think the U.S. should prevent or stop genocide or mass atrocities from occurring in another part of the world. That, you know, again, they probably worded it strangely to get this amount of people. And then you wonder who they asked. But, you know, thinking that the United States should be out there preventing or stopping atrocities or possible genocide or whatever from occurring in other parts of the world. So what this shows here, if we need it to know it, the Holocaust narrative is carved in stone in our culture, or that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to get it so deep that it can never be undone. And so what I say, Charlie, is that the purpose of Greg's Johnson's major paper on this, which I term something like Holocaust revisionism irrelevancy to white nationalism, he's in essence also repeating what Mark Weber did only 3 years ago, but it is, you know, it is saying this is so difficult that let's just not deal with it. Let's step over it. Let's go past it and leave the revisionists to deal with that. And I just have to ask, what's he trying to accomplish with this? Maybe he is sincerely, very, very likely, sincerely trying to accomplish saving white nationalism from getting caught in this horrible Holocaust web. Well, so now it's your turn. Go ahead.
I think that Greg Johnson is trying to rebrand the American extreme right wing, and he's taking his cues from the European right wing. And the reason that he's distancing himself from the Holocaust revisionism is because we get stuck arguing and debating and going over and over this particular controversy. And I think that Greg is an intellectual. He wants to draw intelligent people and bring them from the left maybe over to the right. And it's a rebranding technique to attract persons that might be put off by Holocaust. They don't want to be associated with Holocaust deniers. We've been demonized. Anybody that's skeptical about the Holocaust is immediately demonized as a hater, an anti-Semite, or a kook. And so, in order for Greg and maybe Mark Weber, who's a friend of Greg's, to attract a different caliber of person to their way of thinking, they want to get the Holocaust behind them. And as I said, I think that those guys are looking towards Europe and what Marie Le Pen and the European New Right have been doing, with the exception of Anders Breivik, you know, and his obvious Zionism.
Well, now, his obvious Zionism.
Yeah, the European.
Yeah, I know Breivik, but I don't know that he is really a Zionist, because he's talking against that to the Norwegian people in his trial. But I don't want to get sidetracked into that. At least not yet.
I was under the impression that if he's a nationalist, he's also in nationalism. The Jewish people can have their.
You're right, and that's the same thing that Greg Johnson is saying, isn't it? That nationalism for everyone, including the Jews. You think the Jews are going to ever go along with that and stay in some country of their own? Of course, they're not.
No, I don't.
And you think we would ever have the power if they, to make them do that in a peaceful kind of way like this, to say, well, let's have nationalism. I mean, you're going to convince they're going to convince people by their arguments that this is the right way to go.
Well,
go ahead.
You have to take this into consideration if you're a nationalist that nations for ethno states are going to, that's what we stand for. No, ethno, some kind of ethno state or overarching, system.
Go ahead. I can't.
Well, a system for people that are like-minded and probably come from the same culture, right?
Yes. But you see, my answer to that would be that's good for everybody, because we know that nobody else in the world acts like the Jews do. But that is not, the Jews are not going to go along with that, because they never have. They only talk that thing that they want their own country and so on, but they never really want to stay there. They want to have people everywhere.
Right.
So we still have to deal with the Jewish problem.
But it's such a tar baby that I believe that these intellectual leaders of what Greg Johnson calls the North American New Right are looking for some kind of way to get over being tarred and feathered as Holocaust deniers, anti-Semites, and racists, you see?
Yes. Well, either you reject, you say, I'm not an anti-Semite, I'm not a racist, I'm not a Holocaust denier, or you do the other way and you say, you prove to me that there's something wrong with those things. I'm not going to just accede and accept that those are bad things and that I don't want to be that, and therefore I'm going to do everything I can. That there's no end to that. You'll be shut up altogether and then gotten rid of, and that's the genocide that we're facing. And this is why, we see the problem, but we disagree on the solution.
Well, the problem, the controversy is whether or not the truth should be embraced, or whether or not it's the truth is so hard to defend that it should be sort of like skirted. But then again, you're capitulating to this myth, that's being used to promote multiculturalism and globalism.
Okay, wait a minute. You're capitulating to what myth? Whose myth?
The Holocaust. I believe the Holocaust is a myth.
Okay, yeah, that's right. Well, I agree with that. We can't capitulate to myths. And if Hadding were here, he might say something about the truth. I don't know what he'd say to this exactly, but he often says that we can't compromise on the truth, really. We have to stand up for the truth.
That's the argument that's been going on at the Occidental Observer. Most of the commenters have been very adamant about facing the truth. I mean, the truth should be important. The truth should be, that should be it. I mean, we should stand for the truth and not for some. They're working on a strategy. What's more important, the white nationalist or a North American New Right strategy, or is the truth important? That's the issue.
Okay, yeah, strategy. And speaking of that, Kevin McDonald has often written about strategy as kind of trumping truth, because he did that with the Geert Wilders, and speaking, well, maybe he was using this friendship with the Jews and with Israel and so on as a strategy.
Right.
And it might be a smart strategy to get people elected and so on. And you know, doing things that don't follow what is really in the long run would be best for us or good for us, but as a temporary strategy, I don't know. See, there's a lot of disagreement with that, whether that ever can work out in the end to go against the truth and then think you're going to get back to it. And so many people say that in other instances too, where they say, well, let's go along with this until we get a stronger or until we win or something, then we'll turn around. Let's go along with Jews. Let's have some Jews and try to get the media off our back until we get stronger, and then we'll deal with the Jews. Well, you know, I can't agree with that either, and I don't know any examples where that was ever successful.
Well, there people that read the mainstream media are constantly being bombarded with stories about Republican Democratic campaign strategies. You know, these wizards like Karl Rove behind the scenes making things happen, and then the Koch brothers and all that stuff. So mm-hmm. I think that let's just call, instead of calling ourselves like white nationalists, just say we're the North American New Right, like Greg Johnson would like to rebrand the movement. There's not really a movement.
Well,
either.
You like that? You like that name?
But
you live in the Northwest. Well, it's not Northwest. It's North American.
North American,
U.S. and Canada.
Yeah, let's talk about the old. You know, Greg has an idea about the old right and the new right.
So I know. There's a lot of criticism of that.
And then
some people like it, but a lot of people don't.
Some people think that there's absolutely no way that you can draw a line in the sand between the old right and then start to have something called the new right. That we're all going to just be thrown in to one big soup of right-wing neo-Nazis. You know what I mean? It's like.
Well, I think the North American New Right is aimed at white nationalists, and it's aimed at defining something in a different way in order to make a different start with Greg Johnson and his ideas at the forefront. And he, you know, Greg Johnson is a person who has been who sees himself as a persuader, as a person who can write and argue and somehow beat out his opponent. You know, Alex Linder sees himself the same way. He has said it, you know, that he can out argue any Jew anywhere. He can out argue this. He can win arguments. And this is the same thing that Greg Johnson thinks. And I don't give that to either one of them. They might be pretty good, but they're not that good. And I don't think that Greg Johnson actually has done a very good job of arguing his position in this article. But actually, that's because I just don't see it that way. And he's gone about it in a kind of a long-winded way and put a lot of preliminary steps and so on and made his case very carefully.
A PhD in, I think, religious history or something. I mean, he's a...
Okay, you know... Charles Good, can you tell us where he got his PhD?
No, I don't know where he got it, but I believe it.
Yeah, I believe it too, but why doesn't he say where he got it? I mean, no, I've never found that anywhere. And maybe it is, maybe it's not a secret, but what comes to my mind is that he doesn't want people to look into his educational history or look into his past or know about him. So if they knew where he went to school, they could find out some things maybe that he doesn't want.
I think he's being, Carolyn, I don't think he's being disingenuous. When I first got in contact with the man, he had a teaching position in, I think it was Atlanta, Georgia. And then he moved to another school, and then he left that school because I was corresponding with him.
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying he's disingenuous about his PhD, but how do you find out where it came from? I don't think that should
just
be
ask him. I'm sure he'd tell you if we asked him. I don't think
maybe somebody will write in, who knows, and tell us. That's a question I've had.
Don't forget too that the Countercurrents website is about building some kind of a cultural base. It's not strictly a political strategy that is being kind of looked into. It's also having to do with writing and poetry and art and music.
If he's building a cultural base, which is what he's been saying all along, mm-hmm. and they want to kind of build and be the ones who determine the intellectual basis for the right, for the new right.
Yeah.
Then why did he write this about the Holocaust doesn't have anything to do with that?
Well, I don't know. I think that he thinks that this thing is going to slow down the growth of any kind of opposition to this cultural Marxist tyranny that we live under.
What about the power that it gives to enforce this? I just gave all those news items, which are just common, typical, and they're growing. Here's the thing about Holocaust. Wait a minute. Let me just say this. I'm sorry. Here's the thing about Holocaust. You know, it's increasing. The whole power of it, the talk of it, the preponderance of it everywhere is increasing since 50 years ago, you know, 40 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And that tells us that we have to deal with it because it's swallowing us up. It is.
I agree with you, and I'm when I first began to look into revisionism, you know, I thought any minute now the lid's going to be blown off this thing, and it's been 10 years, and it's just gotten worse.
That's right. And I don't like when there's some.
I'm dispirited, to tell you the truth. I mean, yeah. It depresses me.
Well, there's some people who revisionists who want to say, oh, this thing is so done, because they know all the information that the revisionists have put out, and they know that the whole thing has been shown. When people say, oh, we need to prove, if we could prove that the gas chambers didn't exist, well, it's already been proven that the gas chambers didn't exist, and all of this stuff has already been done, and that's why certain revisionists will say, boy, this thing is almost over, these people have no argument, but it's not about their argument, it's about their power.
Yeah.
And this is actually where people like Greg and Mark Weber are coming from, or say they're coming from. But they're not without defeating the Holocaust, they can't defeat the power that has been attained because of it. You know, unless you have something you want to answer to that right now, I'm going to read this one comment that came last night.
Okay.
You sure? You sure you don't want
to? I really, go ahead.
Okay. This is someone in Europe, and he said, here are some words your listeners may find useful to keep things in perspective against the black hole of the big H. And he's quoting from Robert Forreson. That's who this quote is from. From, you know, a well-known, for those who might not know, well-known, famous revisionist, a Frenchman who's a very brave man, very brave, courageous man. From a few scraps of a given historical reality, things that were, after all, commonplace in wartime, like the internment of a good part of the European Jews in ghettos or camps, the Holocaust religion's promoters have built a gigantic historical imposture, the imposture all at once of the alleged extermination of the Jews of Europe, of camps allegedly equipped with homicidal gas chambers, and finally, of an alleged 6 million Jewish victims. Well, let me just say before you comment, Charles, that, you know, it's this is not what's at issue here. It's not, we're not here, even you and I, to convince people that the Holocaust is real. We're here to discuss the idea of how it should be used or not used. And he says, for my part, I'll put it to the person in question that no one has, in reality, stepped over the lie-turned-religion that, in brutal reality, brings us colored invasion and perpetual war against, quote, Hitler, unquote. The enemy of the kosher world empire is always and unfailingly a new Hitler. How can that have escaped, Johnson and the late Bowden, Jonathan Bowden, he's referencing here. Okay, that's his comment. Well, you know, he's on one side of this.
He's saying that the powers that be will always find a new Hitler, no matter.
That's right, and as long as that business stands, then they can do that.
Right.
As long as Hitler and the Holocaust and all that remains, they can call everybody a new Hitler, and they do.
Hey, listen to this. What about this business of the difference between the Christian sacrifice of Jesus on the cross, which is one man and his suffering, and then being trumped by the suffering and death of 6 million people? Do you understand about what might be going on with the competing myths of the Christian sacrifice and the Jewish sacrifice, and how the Jewish sacrifice trumps the Christian?
You know, I was looking at these emails. I didn't quite get that. Go ahead.
Oh, never mind. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, there was a commenter that named Sandy that was on that thread, you know, that said, was talking about the difference between the Holocaust and Calvary. Christ's moment on the cross, one man's death and sacrifice, and our Western culture built around nominally Christian society that we've been brought up in. And then this Jewish Holocaust, which has become, it's a myth and it's a civil religion now. So I think that there's competing myths, and it looks like the Christian myth is being replaced by this new civil religion, secular religion of the sacrifice of 6 million Jews, you know, and the museums, memorials, the monuments, study centers, Holocaust chairs at the universities. It's all part of the promotion of a new kind of, like I said, a civil religion, maybe.
Well, that's right. And go ahead.
And you call your the heretics hour. I mean, we're the heretics in a new religion that's being promoted and built up and embraced by governments, you know, throughout the United States and Europe.
That's right. That's exactly what I was getting at with that. It's being carved in stone in a way that you can't get it out. It's so much a part of our entire culture, fabric of our societies, our governments, everything that's being taught everywhere, the media, everything. And this should frighten us to death. You can't step over it. I mean, it'd be nice if you could,
but
you can't, because it's not going to, we're not going to get anywhere because it's directed against us.
But look what happened to Ernst Zundel and some of these other people that we know that are sitting in prison right now because they dared to go up against this thing.
Well, that's right. And that's why these people don't want to deal with it, because they're afraid. And I was going to do this program today on fear of the Jews and just talk about how we're still so afraid.
But
of
listen
the Jews,
to this. It's not just the Jews that are promoting this thing. I mean, it's not. Yeah, it's their little myth. But we're going to be rounded up not by Jews. We're going to be rounded up by, if it comes to this, by people that, you know, that like ourselves, that are just wearing uniforms.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then Zionism is not just Jewish either. I mean, we've got all these Christians. There's more Christian Zionists now than there are Jewish ones in America. It's crazy.
Okay. You know, my program shows that Hadding is on the call with us. And I'm not going to change my one program here, my one page here, to see if he's there. But Hadding, are you there? No, he's not there. Well, I may not have answered the call, and that's why, but it doesn't show that I have to answer it. Oh, 9:30, it shows that he's here. Well, let me just finish this other thing up here, and then we'll get back to this. Where did it go? The email. All right. This same European wrote another thing here, and I'm going to go ahead and read it. He says, no educated white dissident has the right to ignore the catastrophe to our civilization that 1945 represents. By way of a succinct reminder, below is a summing up of by the British historian and Brigadier General J.F.C. Fuller. The quote, the western frontier of Russia had been advanced from the Pripet marshes to the Thuringerwald, a distance of 750 miles, and as in the days of Charlemagne, the Slavs stood on the Elbe and the Böhmerwald, 1,000 years of European history have been rolled back, unquote. Well, you know, we can quote all these people, but emailer says, knowingly to let it go on, being justified, this takeover, really, of who we are and our land and our homeland, by the Jewish extermination myth is cowardly and criminal. Well, what we come to here, Charles, is that people, everybody understands this, and they just have a different solution to how to stop it. And what Johnson is arguing is that his solution will do more to stop it, and he's following in the footsteps of Mark Weber in doing that. I got a message now from Hadding. I don't know if I can get Hadding on. He called too late. I don't know how he got mixed up with the time, but people do. I didn't think he was possible for him. He knows he's been on this program before. Now let me hold on. Let me get my. I'm gonna. You know, I will do this at the break. So let's just continue. I'm not going to take up show time with dealing with this. But at least he's trying. He's there. He's trying to get on, but he can hear us, but he can't say anything. So I probably have to see if I can add him in. But I'm going to wait until the break comes up. So let's just continue. That's the end of the emails that I have. And where I've got some, I'm now dealing, can deal with some of the comments and the differences of opinion that we have. And the first comment I have here is yours. Now, but what would you, where would you like to go from here? We've got less than 20 minutes in the first, in our first hour here.
Where would I like to go?
Yeah, what would you like to say? Would you like to say something that you haven't had a chance to say yet about what we've been discussing?
No, I don't have anything. I just wanted to have a conversation with you about the different, about this, about the, I'm with you actually. I mean, I might as well come out and just say it. I'm revisionist.
Well, now you're, what'd you do with your sound?
I didn't touch it.
Okay. Maybe it'll stop. I heard some feedback.
I think revisionism is important, and that's how I was brought into the North American New Right or white nationalism or whatever you want to call our way of thinking and how I was introduced to, writers that have been lost down the memory hole who, were, I guess you would call them, right wing, writers, non-interventionists that during the World War II, you know, that like Charles Lindbergh and Westbrook Pegler and anybody that was sort of an anti-New Dealer that didn't want to go to war again after the First World War. So I was brought into a whole new intellectual world as a result of my interest in revisionism.
Yes, and you know, it's difficult to bring people into that. You are more of a open thinker. As I have always been, we're both artists. You're certainly more successful, more serious an artist than I was. You've made a regular living or career out of it. I did pretty well for a while, but then I just quit doing it. But there's that. I think artists have pretty good minds, really, and are open to things, and that's what it takes. And just the fact is that most people don't want to go anywhere where it's not comfortable and they're not that interested. You know, you're curious. You wouldn't have gone into that business with that a Romanian bishop if you weren't really curious, and things, you know, strike your curiosity and you start looking. And that's probably the way it is with all people who become Holocaust deniers or Holocaust revisionists, who doubters and so on.
Well, it has to be that way. My friends don't have the time that I have to be curious. They have jobs, they have families, they have other responsibilities, and it's really hard for me. I enjoy the intellectual companionship of someone like Greg Johnson, because he's devoted his life to being, you know, up on things. He's an intellectual, so I appreciate his friendship.
Well, you know, we should all appreciate each other. You know, even though we're having this, we have disagreements, We should still appreciate each other, but it gets to be kind of hard when it becomes issues that are very close to your heart and really important to you, and you feel like what the other person wants to do is to, okay, let me just say this, and I've got another email. I want to read it before we go to the break, but let me just say this, that I think I can understand something like the North American New Right stepping over revisionism. They don't have to fight the revisionist Holocaust battle. You know, the Holocaust revisionists don't even want, most of them probably don't even want to be associated with white nationalism, with anything racialist, you know?
Right.
And we know that's true. So they're not crying about this, about anything Greg Johnson would be saying. They see it as science and history. And not politics, and they don't want it to get political. I bring politics into it. I don't deny that. I'm political, and I see it as a political thing, and I think it is. So I take the kind of the total approach. Then there are a lot of people like me, probably you're one, where we see it as this total picture. So it's very big to us. But you can have white nationalists who say, well, I don't want to deal in it, but I think that Greg Johnson can have his thing going there. But I think that I don't like to use just the term white nationalism. Let me say the whole progress of the white race, I think, does hinge on dealing with the Holocaust. I don't think that we can, as a whole, in our survival for ourselves. And as this emailer from Europe was writing about all that's been taken, all that we've lost already, and we can't allow any more to be lost, or we won't have anything. I agree with that, that the time we have to stand and fight on this. So there's going to be people, I guess, who don't want to and people who do, and we just have to make our case as well or better than say someone like Greg Johnson and Mark Weber make their case. And, I am associating the two. And I know you don't have the same high opinion of Mark Weber as you have of Greg Johnson.
Well, I was just disappointed in Mark Weber dropping the ball on revisionism because he was heading up the Institute for Historical Review, which I always associated with the revisionist cause. So when he abandoned it, I felt bereft because I thought he was going to proceed. And he didn't.
I wasn't really... too involved. Well, I was by the time he wrote that letter. It was only in 2009 that revisionism was not really relevant anymore or something like that, I was quite aware at that time. But before, I wasn't involved in it when he was, back in the 80s and early and even in the 90s in the 90s, I would say, when all this,
It was great. They had conferences, with scholars coming in and.
Sure, it was great. Yeah.
And they put out a journal, and that's what I had more optimism back then than I do now about it.
Well, look, it could be said that Mark Weber did a huge amount of damage because, as you say, it was a serious undertaking. There were all kinds of people involved. They had a journal, they had this, they had that, and a lot of people were waking up to it. And it was being done in a good way. And then, what happened first was that some of these top people were arrested and they got into legal trouble. And that scared Mark Weber. Basically, he was just scared and he didn't want to hold up the banner anymore. But he should have resigned from the IHR and let somebody else take over who would do it instead of treacherously, in my opinion, making sure that he was could stay on there by having his board of directors that would support him and changing the direction of the IHR.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you on that because this anti-Zionist front that they're – the IHR puts on now is pretty thin to me, although I do enjoy listening to Mark Weber lecture periodically because he does have some interesting things to say about history. I mean, he's not
Well, sure. So he's a historian. So he's going back to general history. Yeah, he does a lot of revisionist history, but it's safe. You know, he does right. everything safe. And he's not going to get in any trouble. And he's not making any waves. He's not going anywhere. So let's get off of him. I think we've covered that enough for the time being. And okay. Let me read this from somebody named Troy. I don't know how long it is, but I'm going to start reading. No, it's not Troy Southgate, and it's not another Troy I know. It's the Troy I don't know. Okay. But he's from the UK. Yeah, he's from the UK. And he looks like he's a nationalist for sure. And he says, regarding the topic of should white nationalists ditch Holocaust or homosexuals, I would firstly state that the correctness of an answer would ultimately depend on an individual's degree of knowledge of the effects of both afflictions on the cause of the continued survival and advancement of what I call the Aryan race. I do not claim that my own knowledge is infallible, but in existing with eyes and ears wide open, it is apparent to me that both are vicious weapons directed at the complete destruction of Aryan civilization and probably also what remains of the race that created and perpetuated it. The Holocaust quite obviously facilitates the following. A, the existence of the State of Israel. B, an attitude of turn the other cheek among media, government, and business with regard to Israel's not insignificant crimes of a huge variety. Okay, and then C, the continuation of racial dilution and miscegenation throughout formerly Aryan nations. What he's saying here is that it's tied in, that the Holocaust is tied in to white genocide. And Greg Johnson is saying that he is concerned first and foremost about white genocide, and all white nationalists should be. And the Holocaust is not helping us with that, but probably is a distraction. And this person, Troy, is totally disagreeing with that, saying that it's what, you know, saying what I've been saying. Now he says the attitude of protecting human rights. This goes on quite long. I think it's too long. He's written a whole thesis here. I know you're already familiar with all of them, Carolyn. Homosexuality is no longer simply a social and biological aberration. It has now become a political monument for the modern false god of equality. Well, I do agree with that. It could even be said to incorporate a homosexual movement with branches in pedophilia, particularly via schools and social engineering, via homosexual activities within the mainstream media. It is given room in Parliament and Senate, and as President Obama recently proved in addresses, its tentacles are being allowed to reach even further with a yet stronger grip. Well, that's true. We know he's called out for the United States to assure that their rights, homosexual, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender rights are protected all over the world. It's the United States' responsibility, or what the United States should do. He has said that. So he says he hasn't read the article. This goes on. There's too much here. It's too much. What does he think? I'm going to read all this? if it is not disintegrated, it will be part of the wider dissatisfaction. Well, I think he's made his point clear. And he's one of those, is amongst the many, who feels very strongly about it and is 100% a white nationalist and for the white race, and he feels very strongly about this. So, I guess we're going to break up into different factions, but there's nothing new about that, is there?
No, but I don't understand that. We've always had in the arts, I mean...
But it's new.
The politicization of sexuality is new. But there's always been homosexuals in the culture, right?
Yes, I know. But I guess what we're objecting to now is that Greg Johnson is setting. And I'll just be very blunt. Greg Johnson is setting himself up with countercurrents as leading something new called the North American New Right, which he thinks should be the whole right, really. He's not saying, well, I'll just be this little group over here called the North American New Right. He's intimating and allying with people, other right people. Like, look at Kevin McDonald is a big deal. with the right, that this is what the right should be. This is what we're building, a new right that is going to be the right as opposed to the old right. There's all these homosexuals. It's a haven for homosexuals at countercurrent.
Oh, it isn't. I think that you're there's a few out of the closet homosexual writers that he promotes at countercurrents, but I don't think it's a gay.
Why does he promote those writers?
Carolyn, they're not that good.
They're not that good. Come on.
Yeah, they are.
They're not better than others. He can promote others. I mean, and like, then on this thread, okay, on this thread, we came up with towards the end, these writers didn't come on this thread. O'Meara and Donovan did not come on this thread to defend this article or anything. They stayed away. But then later on, this fellow named Donar Van
Holland
came on, and here we are at our break time. Came on, and he made a big deal out of his homosexuality, and made it very clear. And then some people got on and were very upset with what he was doing. And we'll get into that in the second hour. And ladies and gentlemen, Charles, I just want to thank you so much for dealing with this difficult issue with me. And we'll see if we can get Hattie on during the break. And at any rate, we will be back in 5 minutes after our musical. I've still got 30 seconds. So, Charles, you want to add anything before we go to the break?
No, but I hope Hattie can get through because we need a dialectician like him to balance this conversation.
Well, I hear somebody coughing, and I don't know if it's not your friend that's there, which. I don't think it is because she's there. He is. He's here. He got himself on somehow, and we're all three on here. Hi, Hattie. Well,
hello.
That's great. All right. Well, we've got ourselves together. I'll find out what the heck happened to you during the break, and we'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, in 5 minutes, so stay with us.
Well, how do you do, young Willie McBride? Do you mind if I sit here down by your graveside and rest for a while, need the warm summer sun? I've been walking all day and I'm nearly done. I see by your gravestone you are only 19 when you joined the Great Fallen in 1916. I hope you died well and I hope you died clean. Our young Willie McBride was it slow and obscene? Did he beat the drum slowly? Did he play the fife slowly? Did they sound the death march as they lowered you down? And did the band play the last post and chorus? Did the pipes play the flowers of the forest? Did you leave it a wife or a sweetheart behind? In some faithful heart is your memory enshrined. Although you died back in 1916, in that faithful heart are you forever 19? Or are you a stranger without even a name, enclosed and forever behind the glass frame, in an old photograph torn, battered and stained, and faded to yellow in the brown leather frame? Did he beat the drum slowly? Did he play the fife slowly? Did I sound the death march as they lowered you down? Did the band play the last post and chorus? And did the pipes play the flowers of the forest? The sun, now it shines on the green fields of France. There's a warm summer breeze, it makes the red
poppies dance, and look how the sun shines from under the clothes. There's no gas, no barbed wire, there's no gun firing now. But here in this graveyard, it's still no man's land. The countless white crosses stand mute in the sand. To man's blind indifference, to his fellow man, to all generation that were butchered and damned. Did he beat the drum slowly? Did he play the fife slowly? Did they sound the death march as he lowered you down? And did the band play the last post and chorus? Did the pipes play the flowers of the fall? My young Willie, my bride, I can't help wonder why. To those that lie here, know why did they die? And did they believe when they answered the call? Did they really believe that this war would end wars? Well, the sorrow, the suffering, the glory, the pain, the killing and dying were all done in vain. For young Willie McBride, it all happened again, and again and again and again and again. Did they beat the drums?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Well, we've got our whole crew here now. And we're ready to do our second hour. I'm Carolyn Yeager, and my guests are Charles Kraft and Hadding Scott. Hello, Hadding.
Hello.
All right. Well, do you want to tell us what happened to you, or should we just pass that by?
I had a problem with the sound on my computer.
Okay. So. All right. Well, I don't know. I'm glad you were able to get in on your own. I didn't know if you could or not.
Well, it's fine. You had an hour alone with Charles Kraft there, and got to really probe him a little more than you would have if I'd been there.
Yeah, and I got to say all my stuff, so we feel pretty satisfied. So where we're at now, if you've been listening, what would you like to start this segment off with?
Yeah, well, Charles Kraft there, he talked about, he used that term rebranding. I used that term myself last night on a VNN forum to describe what Greg Johnston seemed to be trying to do. And the reason why I use that term rebranding is because of what it connotes. It connotes marketing and advertising and cosmetics.
Okay.
It's not about doing anything deep or real. It's about trying to fool people.
Okay.
And it's not going to work because these people, the Jews and people on the left in general, are used to that. As a matter of fact, they'll accuse you of doing that even if it's not what you're doing. You know, Pat Buchanan can't get away with without being called a Nazi. What makes Greg Johnson think he can say, oh, I'm new right and Hitler's old right and that's nothing to do with me? You think that's going to work? Where's he
No.
been?
Yeah. Let's make sure Charles is here. Charles, say something.
I'm here, and I'm glad Haddock's here, because one of the things we didn't discuss the last hour was this distancing from National Socialism. So maybe Haddock can talk about it, because Haddock, aren't you a National Socialist?
Yes.
Okay.
By thought, but, you know, I'm not a member of anything.
Yeah, no, neither am I, but I don't have the same, I think I'm, I don't think it was so bad as a lot of these other people think. It was just terrible. But looking into it, I don't find it. I think it's a pretty good model for proceeding. But go on.
Well, I was going to say that this rebranding thing is not going to work, and even politicians that are not National Socialists end up getting loaded with the burdens of the accusations against National Socialism, and that's how revisionism actually got how it became relevant for white nationalism is because the Holocaust was already being used against white nationalism. Revisionism was the response to that. If you look, what is one of the key documents of Holocaust revisionism? It's Did 6 Million Really Die? By Richard Harwood, whose real name was Richard Verrall, from the UK in 1973. Did 6 Million Really Die? Was written in response to the attacks on British nationalism, which took off in the aftermath of Enoch Powell's Rivers of Blood speech. This Holocaust stuff was brought up in order to suppress British nationalism, in order to suppress the movement to do something about the immigration problem in Britain. You're a Nazi, you want to kill 6 million Jews if you want to do something about immigration. So that's how revisionism came into the picture in a big way.
Right, any nationalism. I mean, basically, you can say that the Jews and their Holocaust story and all this stuff they pull up in Israel and so on, even though they want their country, they're against any nationalism by white people, and they really wouldn't want it by anybody.
But, somehow the Jews have gotten white people to turn against themselves. And so when we talk about Egypt, I have this mental picture of these people that are pulling strings, but it's really our own people that are doing this to us. So we somehow,
I don't know about that. Answer that, Hattie.
About the self-hatred?
Yeah.
Yeah, who's pulling the strings here? It is the Jews. It is the Jews who started it, and they're in position everywhere, and they run all these governments.
Well, see, there is this problem with altruism. Dr. Mm-hmm. Pierce used to say that we have in our race a strong sense of altruism, a strong altruistic tendency. Probably that would have something to do with survival during the Ice Age, mm-hmm. where there has to be mutual aid in order to survive. But
these people who are pulling the strings against us, non-Jewish people, if they are not doing it because they're altruistic. But the common people, you're talking about the general run-of-the-mill white people, are burdened with this altruistic sense from that goes way, way back. You know, it's genetic in us practically.
Yeah, it's a kind of instinct that has been turned into an unhealthy direction. We're supposed to be altruistic for the sake of the survival of our own gene pool, and we've been fooled into extending that generosity to people that are not part of our group.
Yes.
And various things are done in order to maintain that. We get this propaganda, all men are brothers, right? Well, that goes right to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
liberty, liberty, equality, and fraternity, right?
Yeah, yeah. All men are equal, and
well, okay. So
another aspect of that is the suppressing of black crime. See, if the fact of black and other non-white crime, the fact that it's so much greater, and the fact that there is so much difference between white people and these other races, if this fact were very prominently publicized instead of being suppressed, it would go a long way toward stopping this altruism toward the out-group.
Well, now this is what these are the things that Greg Johnson wants to do. This is what he says we should be focusing on. Nobody has any problem with that. We should be, but why should we have to leave out Holocaust revisionism? And you started out saying that that's where it started. You started out with that did 6 million really die? And this because of the movement, the nationalist movement in Britain. And to stop, and then I said, well, they want to stop any form of nationalism. And, so how can white nationalism survive?
The way to stop all this reflexive guilt is just to make people aware that we're under attack.
That's right.
How are we going to do that if we can't get our message about revisionism or black-on-white crime out there?
It gets out.
Yeah, it does get out. It gets out. And
it just needs more promotion. That's, you know, that's if you, for as far as ordinary Joe and Jill six-pack go, I mean, that's the first thing you show them.
How do you show them, Hadding? I mean, really, that nobody's... I mean, we know about it because we live in this little bubble of white nationalism, but what about Joe Sixpack and his wife? How are they going to get the message?
Well, you have to build media.
What, okay, well...
Like, it's a big long-term project, isn't it?
It looks like it, and it looks like they're after us now with this business, you know, the going after the ISPs.
Okay, let's not get distracted off into things that we can always talk about, because this show is supposed to be, and I'm going to insist on this now because time is getting shorter, supposed to be about, do we ditch Holocaust or do we ditch homosexuals, and just dealing with these two, let's say, which is the biggest boondoggle or anchor around our neck of this, of the movement, or is either, or both, or what? You know, because it seems like the people who want to ditch Holocaust don't care about the homosexual problem. And this thread of comments to this article wasn't about that, but it came up, and it came up not from me or from Hadding or from anybody like that. It came up from some homosexuals themselves.
On that thread, right? That one guy?
That thread, yeah. And then other people joined in. And then there were two of them there. The other one was... I don't want to give his name, but he's there. And then there was very, very strong reaction against having homosexuals. And let's just face into this. Not everybody has to believe that, but that these were good people. And one was Andrew Joyce, who has written he wrote the 3-part article on the Occidental Observer on Russian pogroms. That was so popular and highly thought of, and people were praising it. And he wrote one other article on the Occidental Observer, but I believe that's not his real name. It's a pseudonym. He's a very intelligent, scholarly fellow, and he came out with some real strong, and he said some, I will read some of it, but not right at the moment unless, I don't need to, but, it's, you know, very strong things against having, homosexuals. And so there's a lot of feeling about this. There's a lot of feeling about the Holocaust, there's a lot of feeling about that too amongst white nationalists. Are you going to just say, oh, forget, you know, you people, shut up?
Listen, last night when you and I were talking, I mentioned the fact that, Eric Thompson was homosexual, Yaki's promoter in America, right? Matt Cale is homosexual, I assume, and there was a bunch of homosexuals at the homosexual Nazis. I mean, it's a running joke with me and Michael Moynihan about it's a gay Nazi world.
Yeah, there were not a lot of homosexual Nazis.
Yeah, I don't know anything about Yaki, but I investigated the rumors about Matt Cale because Harold Covington was repeating it,
right?
And there doesn't seem to be anything to it.
Oh, really? I thought that was a fact.
What about Eric Thompson?
About Matt Cale.
And Keith Steinle. I know for a fact that Keith Steinle was a homosexual.
Well, Eric Thompson is part of Harold Covington's little circle of friends, and according to Covington's ex-wife, and if you piece that
together... Oh, not Eric Thompson, but the guy, Keith Thompson. Remember Keith Thompson? That's who I'm... Not Eric. Keith.
Oh, so you're not talking about Eric Thompson.
Eric Thompson, somebody else. Keith Thompson was an early, he was back in the 50s. He was a national, he worked for the Germans, I guess, somehow during the war here. And then after the war, he was a big light in the, extreme right. Go on.
Well, you know, there's one thing to have individuals being homosexual or women being lesbians, you know, if they're just, you know, if they're not making a big thing of it and they're really doing good work. I mean, it's true, people have, you know, differences and so on. But what it seems to be now, that in my opinion, what I find that this homosexuality thing follows Greg Johnson around, and because he talks about it a lot, and he's written about it a lot in defense of them. Well, I found quite a bit of it, and then he wrote here in the comments too. He responded a little bit. I don't know where it is right at the moment.
You seem to think he's promoting homosexuality, and I don't.
Well, I think on that website it is, and he has said that the new American, the North American New Right, is going to be a kind of amalgam of right wingers as we are, and West Coast people that have that are liberal. You brought that up yourself, and more bring in the liberals and homosexuals and all of that. So that is condoning, and that goes along with the mainstream, which is trying to push homosexuality as a normal sexual orientation that nobody should raise an eyebrow at, and we just allow that, and it's just going to grow from that. And there's a lot of now this Andrew Joyce says some things here about how they are a treasonous group of people. They tend to be treasonous. They have their own kind of, they're corrupt.
That's true.
And that happened in Hitler's Germany. They keep they make a big deal about this Ernst Röhm, but and Hitler looked aside when Röhm was doing such a good job with the SA, but eventually some things came up and he was told about them. He took a look, and then there was treason going on in there. They wanted to overthrow him. He saw the whole thing. He changed his mind after that, and they were not so tolerant after that.
It wasn't about homosexuality. It was about the whether or not Himmler and the SS were going to be the police force or the honor guard or whatever they were. It was a competition between Röhm and Himmler. Himmler wanted the position, and Röhm had it. So they took it away from Röhm during the long knives.
That's right. True. That's
Röhm
true.
Röhm wanted to carry the National Socialist Revolution farther to the left.
Oh, is that it? Like with the Strasser brothers? Is that part of it?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
But homosexuality figures into it.
Yeah,
in
but he wasn't killed because it's homosexual. It was political. It was a political.
Yeah, but the homosexuality ties into the conspiratorial angle of it. I think, as a generalization, a lot of homosexuals have psychological problems. They have resentment. They have, they've had a difficult relationship with their father, and they tend to have difficulties with authority in general. And so you get homosexuals doing things like this guy that did the WikiLeaks thing, that leaked all that information.
Julian,
I'm not sorry that he did that, but.
Oh, that guy, yeah.
The guy that was in the army.
Jail.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sorry that he did that, but the fact that he's a homosexual makes perfect sense in that situation. He was not loyal. He did not follow what he had sworn to do. He ended up being, maybe a good kind of traitor in this instance, but he was a traitor still.
Right. Homosexuals used to be a big security risk during the
Red
Scare.
That's right. Here I'm going to quote from Andrew Joyce here. This is at the end of his fairly long post, not too long, but for some time, and I don't excuse the words, please, for some time these perverts had been corrupting German youth. Hitler may have had an aversion to gossip, but when he arrived at Bad Wiessee and saw with his own eyes the reality of this corruption, who is to say that his earlier feelings of indifference did not change? He was responding to Donar van Holland here. He said, I'll read this part too, because it addresses what you said, Charles. We must also take into account the arguments laid forth by Goebbels and Himmler, who believed that homosexual acts in and of themselves were not the most dangerous aspect of the problem. It was advanced, not without foundation, that homosexuality was a web of disorders, perversions, neuroses, subversiveness, and secrecy. By its nature alone, it produced individuals difficult to assimilate into the united Volk. Now, I like that sentence. I underlined that. I think that's true. These individuals are difficult to assimilate because they do, to me, like Jews, they do identify with their group. Homosexuals identify very strongly with their sexual orientation group, and they feel that they have to in order to survive, or they're going to be stamped out and so on. So that, I think, always is going to come first to them over the bigger picture, over the white nationalism, over loyalty to white nationalism and all the white people and so on. Something is being twisted around opposite to what really is true in countercurrent, at countercurrents. And it's being twisted around by some of these homosexuals, about homosexuals like O'Meara and Donovan. Anyway, then he says, thus alongside the yellow star, this is what I was saying, alongside the yellow star, we find the pink triangle. And in my mind, justly so. It requires no hatred on my part and no aggression. He's saying he doesn't hate these people. It's just he sees it as factual. Go ahead, Charles.
Homosexuals weren't put into the camps because of their sexuality. It was because of their politics. And then they were branded in the camp with the pink triangle.
That's right.
But they
were. That's right. They were anti-Nazi for the most part. They weren't. You say, you know, there were some that wanted to be Nazi and they stayed quiet, I guess. And
yeah.
Then there were those who weren't, who were anti-Nazi.
Otto Rahn, who wrote a couple of books about the Albigenses, he was that Himmler liked very much. He was apparently a homosexual.
Otto Rahn, how do you spell it?
R-A-H-N.
Hmm. Has it been translated into English?
I'm not sure.
Huh.
I remember seeing a copy of Rahn's second big book on eBay that had been autographed to Adolf Hitler by Himmler as a Christmas present.
What Otto Rahn? What was he? I mean, I don't know. I've never heard of him.
He wrote books about these French heretics. I don't remember. I haven't thought about it lately, but it was about some kind of alternate form of Christianity that was compatible with Nordicism.
Oh, I see. Okay. Oh, you mean people the Albigenses or those people?
Yeah, the Albigenses.
Okay.
Well, I would say that there are a lot of good ones and ones that are valuable. You know, I shouldn't say ones, but, you know, homosexual people. But there's a whole lot that are, if they get in, you know, and they're accepted and tolerated, and that seems to be happening more and more, really, at countercurrents, and then it's spreading to other places. Although somebody said, it was Ward Kendall who said that they're coming from VNN and Stormfront and then somewhere else and then coming on to Occidental Observer. I think he's got that a little backwards. And then getting into the white nationalist movement. But I think I don't know if they've been there or not in those places. But
Kendall tends to go a little overboard with his view of these things.
And a lot of these people are anonymous, so you don't know who they are. You just assume from what they're saying, you know.
I'll also say that getting people labeled as homosexuals was one of the tactics used under COINTELPRO. So a lot of those old timers that got some kind of reputation for being queer were not.
Like who? Give me an example.
Well, cool. Matt Cale, I think, is probably one of the examples. There was
lot.
There were a lot of rumors like that about Rockwell's people.
I was sure. I thought that was absolute fact.
Wasn't that
about Kale? You're surprising me, but I thought, he's got his own thing going. He does it well. So what? You know, he's not trying
to get lifelong partner Barbara, something or other.
What about Eustace Mullins? Speaking of homosexuals, is he homosexual?
I don't really know about Eustace Mullins. I've heard some things.
Yeah. Don't know. If you don't know, why talk about it? Let me make this point here. Where we are now, is homosexuality a big enough problem that it should not be tolerated, at least openly? And as Greg Johnson is doing, he's saying, they're okay. You know, he's got some there that are good. Others, they're part of the white race. What Greg Johnson is actually saying is that anyone who's white is going to be acceptable in this new white society. But if you're not white, you're not. That's the total basis for it. And this, as I commented in one of my comments, I guess, is that anything goes, you know, then amongst white people, as long as they're white. And this goes against the whole idea of the National Socialist Society, which is about, you know, wholesomeness and family, you know, a family made up of families and children and so on, and not just not this anything goes, which is very Weimarish.
One of the surest ways to turn people away from any cause is to have it labeled as a bunch of queers. You know, that's what James O'Meara seems to be trying to do. He posits that the queer and the Negro are the two polarities. You know,
he does. Well, he does.
So
he
we're all a bunch of at least semi-queers.
No, James O'Meara has the idea that the queers are the culture makers, going all the way back to Greece. He says mm-hmm. that these guys were the ones that were the visionaries as far as.
Yeah, and then they bring up everybody. Like Holland directed a comment to me. And by the way, I looked through all those, and I only made about 10 comments, and some of them were I had to make in response to someone who was wrote something to me and directed something to me and or else talked badly about me. So, you know, I felt I had to answer. So it was only about maybe 5 that were really what I wanted to make a point about something. And so this is going to go something I'm going to bring up later about being accused of trying to take over the thread or something. 755 comments. And I made at most some only 10 of them, and some of them were just, you know, forced on me. So, but what was I saying now? I lost my train of thought here. What did you just say, Charles?
I can't remember.
Oh. That is me.
Well, I'm talking about James O'Meara and the idea of this elite group of homosexual artists and poets and who are culture makers. I mean, he's adamant about this. About their role as Western culture.
Yes, and I think a lot of these culture makers, a lot of these writers, I'm sure some of them are queer. I mean, you know, I question quite a few of them. So, or maybe they just act that way, but, you know.
I'm going back all the way to Greece. I mean, that's what he posits. He's got it going right to the beginnings of Western culture,
Well, I know, and I think he's being disingenuous about that.
Well,
and another thing
is,
about these homosexuals, just like, let me say, I had thought about this earlier. Just like the Jews, again, they want to turn every great man into a homosexual if they can. And,
yeah,
you know, this Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, this, that, and there's all kinds of them, and they're all gay, every one of them.
Right.
If you believe them, but the evidence is not definitive, and there were times when people did played around in different ways sexually.
Well, you see, the thing is, if you're talking about classical Athens and later, you're talking about Greece in its period of decay. The homosexuals did not build that culture. Some of the elite were what they call pederasts, which, you know, homosexuals today will go to great lengths to explain that they are not pederasts. They are not after pubescent boys. But that's what these people in the Athenian elite in the 5th century, some of them, were. They were pederasts, not homosexuals in the modern, usually understood sense.
Right.
And some of these people were not pederasts and not homosexuals. There's no evidence that Socrates ever practiced pederasty that I know. No solid evidence.
Right. There's no good evidence for a lot of this. What about Michelangelo? Is that a
Michelangelo? I think he was a homosexual. But you know, see, the thing is about Michelangelo, he was just an artist. He wasn't put in charge of any political movement. A lot of these homosexuals, you know, have some kind of artistic or literary flair or something. And that's fine, as long as they're not put in charge of anything.
Well, that's what brings us to here. Yeah, it's like, go ahead, Charles, I can wait.
What is Greg Johnson putting James O'Meara in charge of. I don't get it. I mean, you guys are really down on having any homosexual.
I think that Greg Johnson's associations with so many homosexuals
so many.
Reveals something about Greg Johnson, and he's putting himself in charge of something.
It's kind of a poorly kept. I'm not going to say it, but anyway. The rumor about Greg Johnson's been out there for a long time now.
Yeah.
So what if, let's say he is gay. Who cares? I don't understand. You guys think
this is what we're discussing, whether it matters or not. And so my question, I think what it comes down to here for this program and the whole topic that I take from the article and the comments is homosexuality damaging to a white nation, a future white nation, or,
Carolyn,
or not just homosexuality, but, you know, allowing it to be really, accepted in a full way.
Carolyn, because I want to tell you how I view this.
Okay.
I what bothers me about somebody like Greg Johnson is not so much that he might be a closet queer. What bothers me, and it's not just about Greg Johnson, but about other people that I see that have flooded into white nationalism in the past few years, is that many of them are comfortable with dishonesty. They lack backbone. There's a character problem with a lot of these new people that have come into white nationalism. They don't have the moral example of William Pierce in front of them. It's a bunch of weasels. It's a bunch of weasels.
Well, we don't want weasels.
Huh?
We don't want to build white nation on weasels.
Look at what Greg Johnson has done with his essay. He has taken a phrase from Jonathan Bowden, an expression from Jonathan Bowden, stepping over. And what did Jonathan Bowden mean with that? It was from a speech called Nietzschean Ideas. Nietzsche was all about manning up, facing the world. The more trouble you can bring on yourself and get through it, the better. That's Friedrich Nietzsche. What Jonathan Bowden was saying with stepping over, he was saying the same thing as Nietzsche's overcoming. You face difficulties, you overcome them. That's what Bowden meant by stepping over. Now, what Johnson does is he changes the meaning of stepping over. What Johnson means by stepping over is really stepping away.
Yeah.
We're going to step away from the Holocaust. Pretend it's not there. Pretend the accusation is not there. He's not going to get away with that. There's a whole different character at work with the Johnson than with Jonathan Bowden. Jonathan Bowden is all for manliness, and Johnson seems to be lacking in that department. Interesting thing. Johnson has been exploiting the corpus of writing of Dr. William Pierce extensively on his blog, whom he now condemns as old right.
Oh, right, yes.
And one of the things that Johnson wrote about his very limited familiarity with Dr. William Pierce, whom he only met on one weekend in 2001 and whose organization he never joined, he said, I purchased the Turner Diaries and Hunter from a bookstore in Kennesaw, Georgia. Frankly, I found them repulsive. The Turner Diaries in particular. Pierce may have been inspired by National Socialism, but his model of revolution was pure Lenin, and his model of government pure Stalin. If he had the power, he would have killed more people than Lenin, Stalin, Mao, and Pol Pot combined.
Yeah.
He epitomizes everything about the old right model that I reject. One-party politics, totalitarianism, terrorism, imperialism, and genocide. At the time, I remarked that as a novelist and political theorist, Pierce was a first-rate physicist. I regarded him as a monster.
You're right, and now he's featuring Pierce, and I agree with you. I've seen so many things he's written. He's done the same thing with Hitler. He's done the same thing probably with even with Holocaust. I mean, which he's talking out of both sides of his mouth, and he's trying to make points, I think, with everybody and make himself look like the person, the place to go and the person to listen to.
Well, he didn't get along with Dr. Pierce when he was alive. You know, he only met him on one weekend and didn't join his organization, hated his novels. And then he turns around and uses his Dr. Pierce's writings on his blog to get people to come to it. A friend of mine used to contribute to Countercurrents. He said he stopped after he realized that almost all the good material there was recycled old stuff.
Well, now we're really going to be accused of attacking Countercurrents.
Well, he said, few good things come from the people that work, you know, that are associated with Greggy, but for the most part, the good stuff there is old recycled material.
Well, I've got another email I want to get read from someone. It's kind of long, but maybe I can shorten it. But also, what?
You got to remember that Countercurrents is a publishing house as well as a website. I think that they've done some pretty good books lately. That Carrie Bolton book about Revolution from Above, I think that's a good book. Oh, that wasn't them. That's Arctos. Sorry. But aren't they trying to be a publisher?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's okay. A publisher.
Yeah, they republished
Erman Vincent's
Ford Kendall.
Did that. I thought that was a pretty good book. You know. But go on.
You're right. I mean, I wouldn't say, you know, everything is just absolutely lousy, rotten. If it was, nobody would be going there and thinking highly of it.
Yeah.
You know, well, but you have to look a little deeper. I mean, it's just a question of... if you look deeper, what do you see?
What you see is a publishing house. You don't see a political party. That's
but
what
he's starting. But he's starting the North American New Right. He's written a book, or he's got a magazine that comes out, or something.
I think all
of this is to get people to follow along a certain line. It's not just a publishing house, right? It's a combination.
But it's okay. Go on. Yeah. I'll let you.
Okay. Well, before I get to this email. I just think we should answer the question, or everybody give their opinion anyway. What is more damaging to white nationalism? Is it the Holocaust? Trying to talk about the Holocaust or fight the Holocaust, whatever, or is it homosexuals in it? What would either of you say? Or neither, or whatever answer you want to give.
Well, let Hadding answer that.
I wouldn't mind Greg Johnson doing whatever he wants to do very much if he would not try to tell the rest of us that we have to do it his way.
Mm-hmm. Well, he thinks he's persuading, and other people can be persuasive too. But, you know, the thing that does strike one, and this might sound like it's nasty carping, but in the comments, I think it's pretty clear to most people that he did not address his objectors. He did not address his critics, and who brought up valid points. And he did not. And even you agreed with that, Charles.
Let me say another thing. I think you could probably find some homosexuals that would violently disagree with what Greg Johnson wrote.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Greg Johnson's just stepping around the Holocaust. I mean, the homosexual thing is a completely superfluous argument here that was brought up in the thread. Greg Johnson didn't have anything to say about homosexuality in his essay. The title of it is Dealing with the Holocaust. So.
Well, that's right. But, you know, he has talked about homosexuality in the past.
But not in this article.
That's right. And that's why I said in a comment, because some, you know.
Was brought up.
I mean, it was brought up because Marge O'Brien wrote that kind of nasty thing directed at me, and then I felt I should answer it, and she had said that I had, in my one of my early white network programs, had attacked Countercurrents, and I replied that I didn't attack Countercurrents. I was going after what I had learned about homosexuality in the movement, and I found a whole lot of it there on Countercurrents. So then that Donar von Holland wrote a comment. He entered in and said, oh, Carolyn Yeager, and he wrote to me about it, and he wrote a few, I answered him, and he wrote a few comments, and then some other people got on there. It just stirred up. All you have to do is bring that up, and certain people will join in. And another homosexual fellow wrote in. And so they were just, that was just something that happened towards the end of the thread.
Well, devolved into this queer, this about queers in the movement. I mean, that's the way they ended it, right?
Well, that was, well, then actually the way it ended was attacking Hatting and I.
Oh,
and we'll get into that in a second. Let me take care of this person's email. I think I owe it to these people to read it. He says, Carolyn, this is someone from the United States. Carolyn, my opinion is that we need to stop playing patty cake with our enemies and start speaking the truth even louder than before, just as you have been. The truth is on our side, and I don't see why we should keep ducking around it. In other words, I'm thinking the shortest route between point A and point B is a straight line. Well, he says, the guys like Johnson are afraid to face the truth. These guys like Johnson are afraid to face the truth. They do not speak for everyone. Yes, the argument that always gets trotted out will scare people off with those facts, even though they are facts. Well, in the past, yes, perhaps that argument was valid, but not today. People are upset. They know they are lied to. They are looking for answers and are cynical, perhaps even more cynical than ever since 9/11. I agree with that. I don't think you're going to scare some. Sure, a lot of people are going to say, oh, you know, we are always told about how people get, you know, what's being said. Mostly it's being said in the media and so on and by media people. But I think it's time. I agree with him wholeheartedly that it's time to speak the truth and tell people. And I think people are willing to listen if you're really focused on the truth and not on tearing somebody down or tearing something up. And he says, you know, the Internet is helpful. And he mentions you, Hatting, as that being an excellent researcher. I do understand and agree that we all have our fields. Not everyone is on board with revisionism, and not everyone is or will become a revisionist. That's okay. Keep chipping away at this massive wall of lies. It's going to be coming down. And he says something that I think is true. Johnson and Dr. McDonald perhaps just don't quite know enough about historical revisionism to be even commenting on it. Well, they admit they don't.
Right.
They don't, and that's why they don't want to do it. But they shouldn't say that it's not valuable for that reason, really. Let me finish. Why aren't we talking about communist crimes? There's too many white nationalists who are admitting the crimes of Hitler and National Socialists and the Third Reich, and instead of talking about communist crimes, but when they do talk about communist crimes, they'll just say, well, the communists killed more than Hitler did, or the communists killed all these many millions or so. And then they kind of stop.
I said that doesn't solve anything.
No, you're right, it doesn't. So
equivalency, the argument of equivalency.
Is not any good.
Tu quoque, it's also called. But you see, the thing is, Jews can say, but we're not communists, right?
Right.
It doesn't bring us any closer to a realistic grip on reality to overlook the fact that our kinsmen in Europe have been slandered.
With a blood libel.
And to respond to it with our own exaggerated accusation. And it may be, I personally think some of the accusations against communists are exaggerated.
They probably are. Yeah. It gets into be, you know, 50 million, and I don't know that anybody's ever shown how that is.
Revisionists on the other side have gone after Robert Conquest, have they not? The guy that came up with all the figures for the communist genocide.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So. Well, Chomsky, he says that Pol Pot didn't do, you know, a million deaths or whatever, that it was a few thousand that were killed.
Oh, interesting.
Well, okay, at the on July 27th, that was yesterday, at 5:28 p.m., which is about 3 hours before the thread was closed. I'm just trying to put it in place here. The person, M.O.B., who had written that thing against me earlier, wrote a second comment and said, why isn't the Carolyn and Hatting dog and pony show, with a copyright sign after it, over at their own website, preaching the Holocaust inclusion to their own audience instead of jamming it really themselves, she means really jamming themselves, down the throats of TOO, the Occidental Observer visitors. I found this really unbelievable. I only had 10 comments there. In that over a period of quite a few days, and a lot of stuff that interests me that I'm involved in. This is echoed later. She said something else, and then this was echoed by Gregor at 6:07 p.m., who said, "I'll drink to that. It's way past time for the thread-wrecking fanatics to crawl back into their own holes and stop undermining civil discourse with ad hominem and slurs." Well, what in the heck are they doing? I didn't give
put on any stop all that ad hominem attack, you bastards.
So there's a big reaction on the other side that we should, people who disagree in the white nationalist movement with icons, particularly on Kevin McDonald's thread, and Kevin McDonald, to his credit, and I've always said good things. I've never, I admire Kevin McDonald more than any other of those people that you can name that are part of that whole group of leadership or whatever. But he allowed it, and he closed it when I think it was the right time to close it. It was really getting tiresome.
I'm just sorry that he let Gregor and Lou get in a flurry of swipes at us, and then they asked for it to be closed, and then it was closed. That's
true. You're right.
And okay, we got in our hits. Now close the thread.
Yeah, and this Lou is another one. I've got a few things of his here, but anyway, this is some strange stuff. Now here's the rest of what MOB said after she said we were the Carolyn Hadding dog and pony show, and we were not working together either. Hadding was on there a long time and had quite a lot of comments, but they're all very good ones, I think. And I came on much after halfway down the line of all these millions of comments, and I didn't write that much, but once you start, you kind of get pulled into it. And anyway, then she said she said about the two of us, they've made their pitch here. No sign of an implementation plan, just a lot of character assassination by two bullies and their camp followers. Yeah. I didn't notice any. Well, yeah, there were people who supported me. Helvina and Katana and a few people did come up, quite a few, and supported me. But they were just supporting my position. And I just find this strange from people who are pretty established figures amongst posters, a strange reaction. So there is some kind of a disparity coming about here.
Let's talk about the 3AP party and Kevin McDonald's 3P. What is it?
American Third Position.
Okay, American Third Position. Maybe you think this.
Go ahead.
Holocaust revisionism should be a party platform? Because if it is, I think the party's going to be blown out of the water.
I don't think so.
Well, they don't even have racialism in their platform, from what I hear.
Really?
There's nothing about race in their platform.
Nothing?
That's what I heard.
Well, what's it about?
I thought it was American Third Position. I thought it was about white nationalism myself, but maybe
no. Well, I think they're trying to be that way in some kind of.
It's like the Liberty Lobby.
They don't want to be known as racist. They don't want to be called racist. That's that whole thing. I think it's about immigration. Probably they probably talk about immigration and white displacement, but they don't talk about
race.
Yeah.
See, I listened to a few of Merlin Miller's interviews, and the main thing I got out of it was that he likes Ron Paul a whole lot.
Oh.
Well, he doesn't say anything. Merlin Miller, he's running for president there. He's not going to say anything that's controversial.
If you know you're not going to win, you might as well just tell the truth.
Well, that's what I think.
I think.
But, that might be his politics. It probably is. But libertarianism is not going to save us.
No.
But...
So you think
I don't know enough about A3P to discuss it really.
But let's just use it as an example of a place where Holocaust revisionism would be considered a part of the program. I mean,
I think they need to be able to respond to this thing being used against them.
They don't want to respond to it. That's what this whole article is about. They don't want to even go there.
See, the whole thing, the whole relevance of revisionism to white racialist politics has come up not because white racialists wanted to be revisionists, but because those accusations were used to harm the white racialist cause. And white racialists need to be ready for that.
Okay.
Simply saying, I'm new right, and those people were old right, and that's nothing to do with me, it's not going to work.
Well, then, how would you incorporate revisionism into the movement? I mean,
well, first of all, you've got two different kinds of efforts in regard to white racialism. You have your people running for office, and you have your people trying to educate the public, trying to develop organizations of fanatics. Running for office, you can't really tell the truth.
Yeah,
you have to do a lot of weaseling, especially in this political system in which we live. If we lived in a parliamentary system, in a proportional representation system, we could make all kinds of radical statements and get some small number of votes and maybe get a few people elected. But in this winner-take-all electoral system, you have to cater to mainstream opinion and try to get a majority, or you get no representation at all.
Yeah.
So this the way our political system is set up here encourages and more or less requires dishonesty.
So are you saying that it would? Do you vote, Haddon? Because I quit voting. I can't even bring myself to get to the polls.
I didn't vote in the last couple of elections.
I've given up on it. I don't even think it's representative democracy anymore. It's just a bunch of money bags running the show.
No, they want everybody to stay playing that game. I mean, that's what I've come to the conclusion of. And so you're better off not voting, even though it seems, you know, when things come down to the wire that you really should go and count, because you do see somebody is worse than the other or something. You know, it's hard to resist that. But I don't think it's wise to do it.
The point I was getting at is that the way to change things is not by putting up candidates for office. Certainly not presidential candidates. The way to change things is by changing the way the public thinks, by changing the way at least some members of the public think, by propagating ideas, getting that revolution in thinking. After you get a significant number of people who see that there's something seriously wrong, then you can think about maybe putting up candidates for office. This is putting the cart before the horse, running for office.
Well, I think that, you know, probably the reason that they've done that is that they thought they could get the word out. If somebody was running for president and vice president, they would be taken seriously as a party, maybe. That's what a party is supposed to do. And they would, you know, be able to go around and make speeches and talk and get people to listen. But like you say, Merlin Miller is so milquetoast about it that he's not really saying anything that helps.
Yeah, if you're going to use running for office as a way to make a difference, you'd have to go about it the Glenn Miller way, which is, you know, use your equal time to say things that really shake people up.
Right.
Well, Hattie, somebody has written in and said that he appreciated what you said about Pierce, because he said, I have a great deal of respect for Dr. Pierce. Shocking to hear this coming from Johnson. That's sad. So what you quoted from what Johnson had written it back then made an impression on him. That's the last of the comments.
Well, what Johnson will say is that this is out of context and it doesn't represent his final verdict on Dr. William Pierce, but it certainly appears to me that he is, especially since he now labels Dr. Pierce as old right and advocating genocide and therefore part of that icky old crowd that he wants nothing to do with. I mean, he seems to be, at the very least, very ambivalent about Dr. Pierce.
What, well, I now, mean,
This whole idea of using genocide. Why is Greg Johnson bringing up that word genocide so much against white people? Against Hitler, against William Pierce, against Nazis, against revisionists, probably. I don't know. And this has really upset people like Rodney Martin, who did a program on him because he used the word genocide.
Well, you know that the word genocide was it's a Jewish construct anyway. The Raphael Lemkin was the man that was brought in. He was smuggled into the United States to work for the Carnegie Foundation for international peace. He came up with this word. He stumbled on it. They what's his name? Colonel Murray C. Bernays at the Nuremberg trial grabbed onto this thing and ran with it to come up with the idea of collective guilt for the entire German nation, you know.
Well, you're exactly right. You're exactly right. And so why is Greg Johnson using that word so many times and against so many people, white people?
I think that he thinks that, well, you've used the word today in our discussion about the genociding, the slow genociding of whites by race.
Yeah, but he's accusing white people of committing genocide.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, gee, I don't know. You mean Hitler?
He uses it against William Pierce, according to Patty.
Accuse Hitler, but he's ready to acquiesce in such an accusation.
Right.
There you go. That's better put.
Well, that Pierce, the Hunter, and the other book that got Pierce much attention.
Turner Diaries.
Yeah, the Turner Diaries. That's fiction. I mean, that's like Harold Covington's The Brigade. You know, it's just it's fantasy, right?
Why does he like Covington's books and he didn't like Pierce's books? Or is that the difference in time?
He thinks that Covington's a better fantasist. that's it.
Yeah, we need more fantasy, more escapism.
That's what we want. Well, I wonder, we don't have too much time left. Go ahead, Pat.
Yeah. I was just going to say, maybe we can step away from the Turner Diaries.
Yeah.
Well, it looks like Greg Johnson took them as some kind of a, you know, he forgot that he was reading fiction.
Fantasy.
Yeah, fiction.
Well, also, see, the Turner Diaries, the reason why Dr. Pierce wrote the Turner Diaries was to put things that were actually happening into a form that people would read. He had this tabloid called Attack, where he was putting out stories about anti-white crime, about things that politicians were doing, about the reality of Jewish influence on the government and how it was destructive to white people. And he didn't think that enough people were reading it. He thought if he could put it in the form of a novel, then it would get more readers. So that's what he did, and he extrapolated to the future. So there's a lot of gory stuff in there because that's the way things are going.
Okay. Let's try to sum up here.
And he wants people to man up.
Yeah, he wants people to man up. Well, a lot of people are talking about that. No, that's a lot of criticism of Greg that is not manning up. So is that a problem in homosexuality? So what should white nationalists be concerned with more? That's my question again. Homosexuality or in the movement or Holocaust revisionism in the movie.
Holocaust revisionism.
Is
liars
more damaging?
In general. Liars and weak people.
Weak
I don't
people.
Care if they're queer or not, actually, as far as that question goes.
You got it backwards, Charles. You mean to say that Holocaust revisionism is okay in the movement?
Yeah, I believe it's a good weapon to use against the people that are trying to replace us.
Yeah. Okay, well, you know, this program turned out all right after all. And I want to thank both of you, Hadding Scott and Charles Kraft. And this is Carolyn Yeager saying goodbye for today.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit Carolyn's website at carolynyeager.com.